Call the next case, please.
May it please the court, I am Andrea Sullivan Gould, representing the appellant Jason Shepherd. May I please reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal? We are asking this court to hold that when a person dies intestate and their estate is split by statute, half to the paternal heirs and half to the maternal heirs, that the sole paternal heir is entitled to inherit the entire paternal moiety, even though he is a half-blood relation to the decedent. In this case, John Shepherd died without a will, and so his estate descends pursuant to Section 64.2200. Under Paragraph A, Sections 1 through 4, his estate would descend to his immediate relatives. However, in this case, John Shepherd did not have any relatives who met these descriptions. He was unmarried, never had children. His parents and his sister had predeceased him, and his sister had no children. Therefore, since 1 through 4 did not apply, Section 5 applied, and that states that if there are none of the foregoing immediate relatives, one half of the estate descends and passes to the paternal kindred, and one half of the estate descends and passes to the maternal kindred. And that is exactly what we want the court to hold today, that half of his estate should go to his paternal kindred and half to the maternal kindred. In this case, John Shepherd has 14 second cousins on the maternal side. The appellee, Linda Junes, is administrator of the estate. She's also one of those second cousins. On the paternal side, he only has one heir, Jason Shepherd, who was John Shepherd's father's half-brother. So he is a half-uncle to the decedent, and he is considered a half-blood under Virginia law. The parties agree that if Jason Shepherd were a whole-blood uncle, he would receive the entire paternal moiety, and the 14 second cousins on the maternal side would share the maternal moiety. However, in the circuit court, the administrator argued that because Jason Shepherd is a half-blood heir, he should only inherit half of the paternal estate, and the other half of the paternal moiety, the other half of the paternal moiety should be distributed to the maternal heirs. The circuit court judge agreed and ordered that 3/4 of the estate be distributed to the maternal heirs and 1/4 of the estate be distributed to Mr. Shepherd as the paternal heir. This was reversible error because it is in clear contradiction to this court's holding in Williams v. Knowles and a plain reading of the Virginia Code. In Williams v. Knowles, a person died intestate with no immediate relatives, and their estate was split between the paternal and maternal moiety. The maternal heirs argued that the estate should be split evenly among all the heirs because there were more maternal heirs than paternal. But the court held that the maternal heirs were limited to half of the estate because once an estate is split, half to paternal, half to maternal, they are treated as separate entities, and there can be no further distribution between them. Specifically, the court said, each moiety keeps on its own side, regardless of the other, so long as there are any kindred, however remote, on that side. In our case, the circuit court judge ordered 3/4 of the estate to be distributed to maternal heirs, despite this court in Williams saying, if there be both maternal and paternal kindred who succeed to the inheritance, neither line under any circumstance succeeds to an inheritance greater or less than one moiety of the estate. In Williams v. Knowles, the court was analyzing what is now 64.2202A, dealing with when an estate is distributed per capita versus per stirpes. Our case involves 64.2202B, the second paragraph, that says collaterals of the half-blood shall inherit only half as much as those of the whole blood. This provision should attach to each moiety to show how it is distributed within each side. For instance, if there was a whole-blood uncle and a half-blood uncle on the paternal side, the whole-blood uncle would inherit two-thirds of the paternal estate, and the half-blood uncle would inherit one-third of the paternal estate. However, and if there were four whole-blood uncles and one half-blood uncle on the paternal side, they would get two-ninths of the estate each, and he would get one-ninth of the estate each. It all depends on how many people are in the class. In this particular case, Jason Shepherd does not have anyone else in the class. He is the only paternal heir, and therefore this half-blood limitation just simply does not apply in our case. He should be entitled to inherit the entire paternal moiety. The court's reasoning in Williams is consistent with a clear reading of the Virginia Code. Section 200 starts at the top with when a person dies without a will, it goes to their spouse, then their children, grandchildren, parents, siblings, nieces, and nephews. And if none of those exist, it goes down to the next one. Then it follows that the estate is split, half to maternal, half to paternal. If 202 is allowed to change what already happens in 200, then that means these two statutes have to be read inconsistently. What was already done in section 200A5 in splitting the estate into paternal and maternal moieties would then be undone by 202, allowing a court to do, as this court in the circuit court did, shifting some from the paternal side over to the maternal side. And this would be inconsistent. The circuit court judge also relied on section 64.2203B in error. That holds that when a person is related to a decedent on both the maternal and paternal side, he can't doubly inherit. That simply is not applicable here. Jason Shepherd is only a paternal heir, and so this provision is not applicable in our case. Finally, Ms. Junes argues that half of the paternal moiety should be distributed to the maternal heirs because of 64.2200B. That says that if a person dies and there are no paternal heirs, 100% of the estate goes to paternal heir. There are no paternal heirs, 100% goes to the maternal heirs, and likewise, if there are no maternal heirs, 100% goes to the paternal heirs. However, again, that's simply not applicable in our case. There are heirs on both sides, and Jason Shepherd is the only paternal heir, so he is entitled to inherit the entire paternal moiety. For these reasons, we ask the court to reverse the trial court and order that the estate should be distributed half to the paternal heir and half to the maternal heirs.
All right, thank you.
May it please the court, my name is James McConville, counsel for Pelley. Your Honor, this is one of these cases where we agree with the facts, we agree with most of the interpretation of the statute, we just have a sort of a bottom line disagreement on where this goes. Again, we have 14 maternal heirs, one half-blood on the paternal side. We agree with that. Their position is that we should go through the analysis of 64.2200, which breaks it off into the moieties, the one-half shares, then go into Section 202A, and their reliance on Knowles. Our position is misplaced. Knowles talks about fairness first and foremost, and also in Knowles, there was 70% moiety interest on one side and 30% on the other side. So all the moiety interests were taken care of in that particular case. It also dealt really with what is now Section 64.2202A, which talks about when there are people who pass and shares going per stirpes, per capita, and how the proper distributions are made when you have multiple people on a moiety side. Our position and where the point of disagreement is if you read Section 202B, it says, notwithstanding the provisions of subsection A, which is not something the council references, the rest of it says, collaterals of the half-blood shall inherit only have as much of those of the whole blood. And again, we agree if there were multiple people on the paternal side, he would get a half share of the whole blood. And again, if there were two people on the paternal side, one was whole blood, one was half blood, he would get a third and the whole blood would get two-thirds. We agree with that. That's not what we have here. We have one person on the paternal side. That's all we have.
Okay, Counselor, let me ask you one question. I understand your position about the notwithstanding language in 202B, but are you, the way you're applying it, aren't you also saying notwithstanding the provisions of 200A5?
No, I think what this is all cumulative. It's, the starting point is when we get to this point by intestacy, we go on the maternal side and the paternal side.
Right.
That's the start. And then we have the levels of inheritance in terms of who goes first in terms of the lines of inheritance.
Right.
So in this case, we have 14 second cousins on the maternal side and one half-blood uncle. So we didn't get into all of the rest of the subsections under 5.
I guess my point is, maybe I'm not making myself very clear, you're saying that the notwithstanding says you don't apply the A part of 202, or you apply B to work along with the A part.
I think it's all cumulative.
But I'm saying is once you've already made that division under 200A5, how can you go back and then not use that division?
And I guess my point is that because this is all cumulative and supplements each other, I think that's the word that was used in Knowles, that 202 supplements what is in 200.
And my point is, if it wanted to do that, it would say, wouldn't it say notwithstanding the provisions of 64.2-200 and 64.2-202A?
I think the case also does, it does say that there's a, that 202 supplements 200. It's 200 says we're going to break things off into moieties.
Right.
We're going to set up the line of inheritance.
Right.
Okay. Then you go to 200 in terms of the implementation. 202A goes to the implementation of defining the shares once you go through the analysis of 200. So 202, which is what Knowles addresses, is how you deal with. Okay.
But this trial court, in essence, put the moieties back together, didn't he, to get to this division? That's what he had to have done almost.
He kept them separate.
Now, he did the point that okay. He only gave the paternal side, the uncle, one half of what he should have gotten.
So essentially what he did was, is the judge gave Mr. Shepard one half of the one half.
Right.
And left the other side alone. So they got their one half. And we don't dispute the fact that he gets one half of the one half. The question is, what do we do with the other half? And I guess our position is that with the one half of the other half, you have to look to B, because that's where it speaks to it, and it speaks to it twofold. One, notwithstanding all of the distribution paragraphs and analysis in A, you have to look at B to say that this is something different because half blood is different.
And you're saying half-blood takes priority over pretty much anything.
In this particular circumstance, it's the notwithstanding part, but also only one half.
Okay.
And I think it's the fact that it's those two words, notwithstanding all the analysis in A, only a half-blood share gets a half-blood. That's all they get.
But you said only half as much as those of the whole blood. Well, what whole blood relatives are getting more on that side
that's,
of the family?
That's the point. It's divantany.
Exactly.
So
if there aren't any, why would this even be applicable?
Well, because the statute addresses the issue of what to do with half blood.
How can you get half a zero?
No.
He said there's no other whole blood, so that's a zero.
Okay.
And you're saying that he should get half of that?
No, we're stipulating that his half share on the paternal side, he gets a half share. He is entitled to one half of one half. We don't challenge that. The question is, what do we do with the other half because of the limitation that's imposed by B?
But the limitation only applies once you have split the moieties under
right.
200. And so why wouldn't the more rational reading be what counsel has said, that if you have half-bloods and whole-bloods after they're split, then those half-bloods only get half? Why isn't that the correct reading of 202?
And I think the problem is that there is only one half blood. This is why I think the only time this case has come before this court is because the fact pattern is so unique. We have a lot of people on one side and a half blood on the other side. What, and that's the only person on the paternal side.
But that's not a problem, because Williams versus Knowles tells us that once they've split, you never bring them back together for purposes of then deciding the issue of half-bloods.
But Knowles only addresses Section A in the code in terms of their reference on how to do it. They were looking at the issue where all of the moiety shares had been fully taken up, mm-hmm. 70% or 30%, and went to an analysis of the proper distribution and the fairness issue. That's what Knowles versus Williams was about. It wasn't about half-blood because it was never mentioned in that case. We have a unique situation where we have one person in a half-blood relationship, and I think what counsel is suggesting is that essentially by default they should take the rest of it.
I think she's suggesting by virtue of 200 of the code they should take the paternal half.
Counsel.
Yes, Your Honor.
64.2200 does this.
Right.
Divides an estate precisely in half, splits the halves. 202 does nothing to put the halves back together. Where could we find language in 202 that says, notwithstanding 200, you're going to do this? Your notwithstanding language says notwithstanding the provisions of subsection A, which is in 202. So it deals with how do you interpret this half or how do you interpret this half, but there's nothing in subsection B that says you put them back together and then you redivide them.
In terms of the reading of A, though, what A talks about, 202A, is...
202A does not put them back together.
There is no language to that effect.
Well, in fact, 202A said it contemplates that the two pieces have been split. It says a decedent's estate or each half portion of mm-hmm. such estate when the division is required by 64.2-200.
Again, I think what we have is these sections are then supplemented by A and then dealt with by B in this particular situation. It doesn't say in section 200 that once it goes in half, that's put back together. If this in a situation like this where there is only one half blood share on one side. This is a unique situation, and again, the sections, the introduction sections of 202 talk about section 200 and the moiety section, and gets to this is what.
In terms of after you've split them in half, now you do this.
Right.
And what you have done is that you have implicitly changed 202B. So that it doesn't say, notwithstanding the provisions of subsection A. You're reading it so that it says, notwithstanding the provisions of 64.2200. But that's not what it says.
But again, 202A says that it shall be divided into as many equal shares as our heirs and distributors who are closest degree of kinship, and make some definitions of what's part of the division, and then it gets into the proper shares. But then that's why my interpretation of this is because 202 talks about what we do with 200 once the division is made, that there is that analysis of what happens. Then we go to B. That does deal with half-blood relationships. And that's the only place in the code where it deals with half-blood relationships. But again, that's part of the wording of it, is notwithstanding everything that courts are instructed and attorneys to make the distribution are instructed to do in terms of distributions based on a moiety situation. Most moiety situations, there's multiple family members and multiple shares and multiple relationships, and people are predeceased, and you've got to find who the relatives are of the people who deceased. So moieties, by their nature, are complicated, but it's complicated usually because there's too many people. Here we have a situation where there's only one person who's not a full blood. Counsel's right. If he was a full blood relationship, this estate would have been closed. There was nothing to litigate. The only thing is we have the unique situation of one half blood relation, and that's why the issue is raised, and that's why again trial court agreed with my side, and we're here today on this particular point.
Can I ask you a question? Given your interpretation of the statute, what happens if an individual passes away and their only relative is a half-brother?
If that's all there is?
Right.
If it's half-blood, it would go, before you get to 1-5, Section 5, it would go to the half-blood brother.
What if there were two half-brothers?
They'd each get half.
Okay.
Because there's two of them. And again...
So how is that any different from the moiety we're dealing with here?
I think your question, if it reaches the moiety situation...
No, I'm just saying that there's an estate. You say, yeah, the moiety is the whole, and there's only one relative, but the person is of half-blood.
In that case, that person would get everything by default because there isn't anybody else.
Okay.
Here we have the situation where there were people on the maternal side, there were a number of people on the maternal side, and there was one person on the paternal side.
Why are people on the maternal side entitled to anything from the paternal moiety? Didn't we say in Williams that it's just like a separate estate, basically?
My argument is he gets a half of the half. No question there. What do we do with the other half?
And give it to him.
My answer is go to B, Section 200B, that if there is no one on that paternal side, because there is nothing there, his half is taken, there's nothing there on the other half, then it descends to B and goes to the maternal side under Section
200B. The problem with that analysis is that there is somebody on the paternal side. He just happens to be a half-blood.
And again, I'm...
Well, now, if you're right about the half... then the only question is where does that half go?
That's right.
And didn't we answer that in Williams as well? We said that if there be both maternal and paternal, and that's kindred, and that's what we have here, because you're right, if there was one side that had none, it would all go. There wouldn't be moieties to begin with. There wouldn't be separate estates, separate classes. He said if there be both maternal and paternal kindred, who succeed to the inheritance, neither line under any circumstance succeeds to an inheritance greater or less than one moiety of the estate. But it seems to me that even under your theory, your half doesn't get any more money. So what happens to it? Does it cheat to the Commonwealth?
No. I mean, my argument is that if Section 200B applies because there's nothing on that side, on the paternal
but
side.
But there is. There's a half-blood on that side. He's a kin. It talks about maternal and paternal kindred. Now, he may be a half-blood, but he's still kindred. So, in Knowles, we said, if there be both maternal and paternal kindred, and there is in this case, who succeed to the inheritance, and they do in this case, neither line under any circumstance succeeds to an inheritance greater or less than one moiety of the estate. So under no circumstances would you ever get 3/4. So what happens to the other half? You know, the public policy of the Commonwealth would be to give it to the Commonwealth, let it escheat, as opposed to going to someone who actually is kin?
My argument is that it would go through B to the maternal side, and because there's nothing, he's there, but his share is fully committed under my argument on B, 202B, it's fully committed. That other half, and the question has always been, what do we do with the other half? Our argument, it descends to Section B and then goes to the maternal
side.
So
would we have to at least modify, if not overrule, what we said in very general and plain terms, it seems to me, in Knowles?
I think the difference between Knowles and this case is in Knowles, there were full moieties on both sides, and there were issues of distribution and fairness, but there was no issue in terms of what to do with the half-blood. And what we had multiple people on both sides, so the court said, we'll deal with everybody who's on the paternal side, who's getting more than the other side, gets that share. And for purposes of fairness, that's how we're going to do it. This is a unique case in a unique situation.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Time's expired.
Just briefly, counsel pointed out that Section 202B says notwithstanding Section A, but that just means it needs to be read consistently with Section A, which is possible, and Section 202 obviously needs to be read consistently with 200, and all of that is only possible if the half-blood limitation is applied within the moiety and not to the entire estate. Unless the court has questions, that's all I have.
Thank you. 5 minutes, case, please.